sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Want you to make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. Like I'm the only one that you'll ever love. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Welcome back, everybody, to another segment of Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness. And I'm Lori Handlers, your host. And today I have an interesting show for you, very interesting. The topic is, and it's a question for you, really, do you like your sex holy or nasty? Like, do you have a polarity about your sex? Do you like it with ritual and like sacred sexuality, very spiritual in your connection? Or do you like things more down and dirty, nasty? Do you like to talk dirty? You remember I had a guest on my show once about nice girls talking dirty. Do you like to be raunchy about sex? Are you very earthy about sex, not so much spiritual about it? That's kind of the question today. And the truth for me about this question is I didn't know, and I still don't think, that you have to select. I kind of feel like you could have it every which way you want it when it comes to sex. You can sometimes be a little princess angel if you're a woman, if you're female, and sometimes you could just be a dirty slut. And for men, the same. So my sense is that you could have it all, and there are times when you may want to play one or the other. There are times when it's hotter to play one or the other. And today my guest, whose name is Galen, his website is dakadom.com, and he is an expert in the area of these kinds of things. Like, I'm going to just tell you what he's committed to. He's a personal guide for erotic empowerment and healing. And he wants to bring your authentic sexual desires out of the shadows and into conscious awareness. He helps others find a safe path for the real-world expression of their sexuality, no matter what the truth of it is. And he helps people stay in integrity with their agreements to themselves and to others. That's a pretty tall order these days. So I welcome you, Galen, to the show. And any light you can shed on whether we could like our sex holy or nasty is very welcome here at Sex and Happiness.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, Lori. I appreciate being here.
How did I do in terms of like saying, you know, do you like it this way, or is it okay to have both? You have some take on that?
Well, I thought you put it precisely as it needs to be, and because you can't really be in your wholeness and your fullness and your authentic self without really covering both of those aspects. And I say that for what to me has been kind of verified as the minimum of 30% or more people who have a fetish-driven sexuality. You know, the other 70% might only want to stay in the sacred aspects of sexuality. Maybe they authentically don't have these darker, taboo, forbidden aspects. But I speak up for that aspect of ourselves, for those who are driven that way, who are authentic. It is authentic and true for them that there needs to be a place in our cultures for that full authentic expression. Otherwise, it is stuck in shadow. It is lopsided, and it comes out in risky, harmful, non-consensual ways when people express their darker sexual desires.
You know, I really don't think I considered it like that. I guess because since I entered into the world of Tantra, which is sacred sexuality, and I got permission to be that way, to be sacred in my sexuality, and to shift the paradigm from something dirty, I guess, or from my sexual desire of being dirty at any rate, I just kind of kept opening to more and more possibility as I noticed the world, in my world, as I open to more, there seems to be more, you know, more possibility, more possibility, more possibility. So the fetish world or the BDSM world or even more and different toy world, etc., seems to be coming more and more into play. I was laughing. I just have to say this. I lived in Washington, D.C. for many years, and I was laughing with a friend a while ago, and I said, you know, all my friends used to be journalists and attorneys and lobbyists and those kinds of people, real estate developers, and now my friends are pole dancers, strippers, BDSM teachers, you know, sex geeks, as Reed Mihalko would put it. And I said, what happened to me? So, my world has certainly changed. Yeah, I like that you could have all of it and that there's nothing wrong if people like vanilla. Like if people like plain sex, it's fine. It's that if they feel suppressed, is what you're saying, then things could come out in dishonest or not so life-affirming ways, yeah?
Yes, and that's why any of these approaches, I think, need to be founded in conscious awareness. You know, that's the sacred aspect of it, needs to be brought in. I think even particularly when you were exploring these more taboo, forbidden aspects, at least in the judgment of many others, you know. I've been involved in the DSBDSM fetish-oriented community for about 15 years now, out 24/7 as a lifestyle choice. And I've also happened to get involved with a partner that I journeyed with for about 7 years who was a tantrika. And so I got connected with the sacred sexuality community. And I thought both of these together really brought a profound unity together, or allowed a sacred ritual space to be created in order to nobly engage any aspect of your sexuality. But I found that what I'll call the shadow of Tantra is this idea, and I've encountered it, that there's something pathological, sick about people who want to engage in fetish driven sexuality, you know, kink, dominance and submission, you know, sadism and masochism. These are somehow illicit and not appropriate, not healthy, if not, in fact, pathological. In the DSBDSM community, they look at sacred sexuality, the idea of sacred sexuality, as well. That's all woo-woo, new age. I don't need any of that in my process. So there's a disconnect here between these two, and what I'm doing is standing, trying to build the bridge, you know, between the two, because these are two incredibly powerful emergences of eros that are unprecedented in the history of humanity, that this much sexuality is coming alive on the planet in a way that's never happened before. And right now these two communities are very important, but they see themselves at odds with each other, and I see them as very unified and necessary and complement each other.
Yeah, I can agree with you. I feel that there's something to be learned from all of it, and the biggest thing is that people need permission for their self-expression, no matter what it is. And so if you find it one way and then lean the other, if you find it the other way and lean the other, like, so what? There doesn't have to be turf war. We have enough disharmony and discord on the planet. We don't have to have people in the sex world pointing fingers at each other and making one aspect wrong to make the other aspect right.
Yeah, so. I think we just need to support the truth, whatever that looks like.
And yeah.
Let that be done. Show, you know, there's ways that these things can be done in a safe way that is honoring the spirit of both partners that are engaging. And that's the misconception. There's, you know, the fetish world is often vilified, caricaturized, and kind of put down there, you know, with sexual violence and such. It's not the case at all. This is a ritual, mythic, archetypal aspect of who many people are, maybe not all.
You know, there's enough discord in the world and disharmony that we don't need two sex positive communities pointing their finger at one to make that one wrong while making themselves right and vice versa. You know, we need all the full self-expression of people, the unsuppression of people, in order to make ourselves whole.
I think you're exactly right, Lori. And this, in the Tantra community, I've found that there's what I'll call the shadow of Tantra, is that people judge, moralize, vilify the fetish-oriented community, and just the opposite of true of the DSM-BDSM community, where they don't really get or honor this idea of sacred sexuality and Tantra. And they are two really different paths, but they overlap in the sense of what should be, as I look at it, about supporting authenticity, honesty, full expression, honor, being honored for who you are and the truth of who you are. And this is a bridge that I think we're at a very immature state in this evolution of Eros that's going on worldwide around the planet. You know, we're like in the adolescent stage, as I look at it. And I think there's a lot of maturing that is happening and is going to continue to happen as we move down this path. But right now, it's a very new experience for people to really be exploring the depths of their Eros in this way. My business card says I'm an erotic wilderness guide, because I look at our Eros as mostly been buried in our unconscious for millennium, and this is new territory that takes a lot of exploring to really get a sense of the breadth of Eros and how deep it is and how it manifests in so many ways in so many different people.
Well, that's a great place for us to take a break. That is such a good point. The richness of it, the thick tapestry of it. So we're going to break here for a moment, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you some questions about how people can start to explore their own Eros and how they can start to also tell the truth about it. So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Sex and Happiness, and I'm interviewing Galen, and he's speaking to us about really what the truth is about people's integrity of who they are as an erotic being. And we'll be right back.
How would you like to lose up to a pound a day with no exercise required, with no hunger, without being on a restrictive diet for the rest of your life, and no unpleasant side effects? If this appeals to you, you want homeopathic HCG. How do you get that? You go to hormonenurse.com. That's HORMONE. nurse.com. There you can find out about HCG and this amazing diet. It's a diet I've used, and I've lost an amazing amount of weight. I'm back to my college size. Plus, you'll find out about hormones, bioidentical hormones. Perhaps you need that too. You need it maybe for sleep, for sexual passion again, your libido. Go to hormonenurse.com.
We're back with Sex and Happiness, and my question for everyone out there today, especially the women, are you a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response? Perhaps you know a woman who could use this. Many women say that feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as easily or naturally as they would like. So let me tell you a little bit about Zestra. Zestra was developed to provide this much-needed option for all women to feel more sexually satisfied. Zestra is a safe, patented blend of botanical oils and extracts created to help women have increased sexual sensations. It comes in convenient, single-dose personal packets. Each individual packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts fresh and safe from damage by light. Zestra starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes, and the initial sensations are called the Zestra Rush. Then the effects tend to peak at around 10 minutes, and they can last for up to 45 minutes. And you can always use more. You can use it as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. I believe that all women deserve sexual satisfaction, and Zestra is definitely a breakthrough in a way to get satisfied. So for more information, call 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please say that you heard about it from Laurie Handlers on Sex and Happiness. Well, I'm back with my guest Galen today, and we're talking about how people can become erotically empowered, how they can use their authentic sexual desires and bring them out of the shadows into conscious awareness if they so choose. And we kind of got into how various sex-positive communities view each other negatively in the first segment, and I kind of want to go now into how individuals can actually start to discover what their personal eros is. So, Galen, could you tell us something about that?
Sure, Laurie. One of the things that comes to mind around that topic is in my work that I do with clients and one-on-one work, it's a typical client comes to me with the statement that they've never told another person about this in their life. They're 40 or 50 years old, and in our culture, we're so shut down and cut off, and it's so unsafe and scary to be able to just to talk a simple truth like, I'd like to be spanked. People have bottled that up for decades. And that's part of my mission, is to change that. But the next thing then, after maybe a client does start to open up to me, and I'll use a woman client as an example, a woman might say, so I'll ask her, so tell me a little bit about what your desire looks like, you know, what brought you here? Because people come to me to help them untangle their desire from all the parts of them that have held them back, shut them down, cut them off from their truth, made them afraid or ashamed or guilty about what their desire was. And so they haven't explored it very much, so they'll often say something like, I don't know, I just want to be taken. So this puts us at the threshold of being able to start to explore and understand what I call their personal erotic mythos is. And this is a journey that you can take in ritual. You can do this on your own at home. You can start this inquiry by simply starting to ask the question, okay, so you want to be taken, so who do you want to be taken by?
Where do you want to be taken?
Exactly.
Where do you want to go?
Exactly. And this is the depth where you start to really get connected to the depth, because this is a distinct persona that is alive within you. As I look at it, and my experience has verified that our erotic mythos is a story, and there are characters in it, there is dialogue, there is body language, tone of voice, setting, props, attire, on and on and on. So in most vanilla sex, as I recall it myself, in that last moment, that last minute or so before I would orgasm, is when this erotic myth embodies. It's just so powerful, you can't hold it back, no matter how repressed you are, how much you've shut yourself down. And it might come out sounding like a Tourette's attack for some people, you know, all kinds of swear words and, you know, take me and use me or whatever. I won't go explicit. But in that moment, if you think about it, that's like a zip file that contains the whole mythos in this soundbite that's come out in that last 60 seconds. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. But you can unpack that, and it's hours of story. And you might have a dozen of those. Some might only have one, but you know, this is what I'm talking about, the erotic wilderness. There's so much we haven't opened up to that we can start to explore on this journey.
So let me just see if I get this straight. In the last few seconds of a person's particular experience, right before they would go into orgasm or while they're in orgasmic state, but it seems like it's right up to the edge, right up to the brink, out of their mouth, assuming they're a talker, because not everyone is. Some people are just seeing pictures,
mm-hmm.
or they're going somewhere else. There are people who go somewhere else. The partner doesn't even necessarily know that they left.
Exactly.
But they go somewhere, and what you're saying is where they go is to this mythological place, like Greece or Egypt or up into the clouds or somewhere.
Or a back alley or down in a dungeon or out in a barn, you know, wherever it might be.
Yes, I get you. So it's all of the above. There's a possibility that it's all the above. So it sounds like across the board, pretty much everybody has one. I don't know if that would stand up in a study, but it sounds like everybody has some kind of mythology like this, or even some character that they romanticized, like a leading man or a leading lady in the old movies, that they, you know, swashbucklers and and Aladdin and Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've heard every mythos you can imagine in working with my clients. It's fascinating how broad and depthful these mythologies are that we carry inside and have tucked away and have not, for the most part, even looked at. That's why they're unconscious. People don't even get, like, that's why the question is, I don't know, I just want to be taken. That's as far as consciousness has brought that person to that point. But once they start to really let themselves open up, like, having a safe place to be able to speak honestly is where people can begin to really open up. And unfortunately, our culture provides so few places, especially if someone has a more taboo, edgy-oriented desire, where they can speak openly and honestly and feel like they're being encouraged and welcomed and honored for what their truth is. That's why we're so stuck in these places and not able to express this rich depth that we carry. And when we don't do that, then it comes out in shadow and somewhere else. You know, it comes out in indulging or being compulsive about masturbation and porn, or it comes out in overeating or irritability or just total aloofness and shut offness, or you become consumed with reading your holy book every day and trying to suppress these thoughts, you know.
Thank you. So this is great, yeah. Or you say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Like, that's the only thing you say.
Yeah.
So I get where you're going with this. I get that you're seeing this. So really, what's the next step? Someone comes to you and they say, I want to be taken. You say, okay, who do you want to take you and where do you want to go? And then how do you unravel this? Do they do it in trance? Do you do it in diary form? Or they just start talking and do you tape record it?
Well, I think, you know, whatever works and all of those aspects that you mentioned can be used. And this is where I think the best way to do it, the safest way to do it the most, is through some ritual practices and processes that brings us into this place where you start to recognize that this, as I said earlier, is a distinct persona. Call it your inner slut, male or female. And this is a part that's generally not been given much room or space or acknowledgement in most people's lives. So they don't know much about it. But by starting with that question, well, I just want to be taken, and then I can do that inquiry if I'm with them, or I can give them an assignment and say, okay, so go home tonight and create a sacred space, and that's simply a place where you feel the most safe, alive, at ease, supported. That can either be a real formal ritual space that you've already created. If you don't have that, it's really nothing more than just creating a place where you can get as present as you can. You might do some breathing, some movement, light a candle, whatever ambience supports your journey that way. And then ask this, call up this part. You know, it's like a ritual process to speak to your inner slut and ask her or him, so I'm really curious to know more about you. I really got that you're here, and I know I haven't paid any attention to you, and I really am fascinated by what you might be able to tell me about yourself, because I get little glimpses, and I'd love to know more. And I just really want you to feel encouraged and welcomed here. And so let's start. Let me ask you some questions.
And so this begins a dialogue between two parts of the self.
Yes.
The self that's contained and the self that's looking to come out. It's like a gestalt you're talking about, having a gestalt with another party, or they used to call it, there's another thing, voice dialogue.
Exactly.
Where this is a voice dialogue with one's inner slut.
Exactly.
We're actually going to break here for a minute. So I need you to hang on there for the next part of this, because I think what you've said so far is like really clear. And if someone is listening and wants to start undertaking this as a practice, this is a good place to be able to have this, just vocalize and have this conversation. We were talking today about liking your sex, holy or nasty, and how it is to unleash any shadow part of yourself that has to do with your sexuality in a ritualistic way. And my guest is Galen, and he's a coach. He's somebody who coaches people to become erotically empowered and to heal themselves and bring their authentic sexual desires out. So when we come back, I have a bunch more questions to ask, and I'm excited that people are listening to this and they can start to do this. So we'll be right back.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Lori Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Lori Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
We're back from break, and I'm Lori Handlers, and you're listening to Sex and Happiness, and my guest today is Galen. And Galen, you were saying right before we stopped there that someone would have a conversation with their inner slut, and they would say, tell me more about yourself. I'd like to learn. Please tell me anything. I've had glimpses of you. That's what you said, I think. And then I caught you off at some point. So there was something else that you wanted to say that I think is probably tantamount.
Well, what came to mind as you spoke about that and this idea that we're talking about of differentiating these aspects, untangling, in this case, your inner slut from all the parts that have, for decades for many people, have held them back, have shut them off. I want to add this into this idea of this ritual that one could undergo is to, before they begin, be aware of that these other parts are not going to be happy that you are suddenly talking to your inner slut, likely. They've been in control and dominating your desire ever since you were a little girl or boy, telling you that's bad, that's evil, you're going to go to hell, good girls and boys don't do those kinds of things. So all these embedded messages are still going to be around. So one thing that I think can be helpful before you begin your journey is just bring that into your awareness to know that, oh yeah, all these parts are going to freak out when I'm trying to make space for my sexual truth to show up here. And so, again,
I actually have something to add to you here.
Sure.
I had a guest on recently, Stuart Mark Berlin, and he was talking about during oxytocin production. And he believes that both men, he's a former physician, and he believes that both men and women have oxytocin production during sacred sexuality. And with big amounts of oxytocin being released into the bloodstream, it's possible to erase shame and guilt and all those, the negative charges. So I'm just adding that in for you to say, look, if someone's engaging in this and they're going to go into sacred space to explore their dark shadows, they can actually have the hope and knowing in the positive that the more oxytocin production that they produce in their brain and other hormones that are released during sexuality, these negative messages can be erased from the brain during this time. I just want you to have that.
Yes, and that's a good point, and that's what I also look at in another frame of that is the idea of embodiment. When you can embody the truth of who you are, you're essentially taking over your body. You're otherwise embodied in all these parts that have held you back. It's a different embodiment, but it's still an embodiment. And I'm not up myself on the neurochemistry involved in these things, but I'm sure that's right on the target.
So just because you said that the other parts are going to be freaking out, and possibly they are, and possibly there's a way to bypass them, I guess that's why I
Yes.
Why I said that to you. It's possible to program ourselves to say, no, this is really good for me. Producing oxytocin in my body will erase that stuff, and I'll be able to be free.
That statement you made right there is exactly where I think the energy can come from to make space for yourself. Tell those parts, no. Right now, I'm making room for my inner slut who's not had a voice for 30, 40 years now, and this is her time, and all of you parts that object, I know you're not going to go away, but I'm making space for this next hour. So we'll come back and we'll talk about these things later, but right now, you stay out. This is about taking your awareness and the power. This is the empowering part, is in your awareness, you can take control, take back control that way. From, and when you start to see that, well, yeah, this part here has been screaming at me forever not to be who I am, and I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to start learning to make space for my sexual truth.
Excellent. So now, I can't imagine. I was going to ask you, you know, how much time does this take? But I guess with each person, it's different when they're discovering and exploring their personal erotic mythology. But I guess once they've discovered their myth or their myths, because there might be more than one, so how do they go about then communicating that to the rest of their environment? So, for example, if somebody's a mother or a father and all of a sudden they start having costumes or ritualized outfits around the house and then they're kids discover these things, or, well, maybe I'm jumping a step. Maybe it's how do I tell my partner of 25 years that all of a sudden I have a mythical slut living inside me, and she wants to be spanked and burned at the stake. And, you know, I'm just thinking, my fantasy as a kid was always being Joan of Arc. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
So how does a person communicate this to their partner or to a new partner, even one or the other, or, you know, maybe you have a different answer for both?
Part of this answer is about the unfortunate state of affairs of our relationships and the sexual dishonesty that has been perpetuated for generations about our sexual truths. Being connected to the tantric community for many years and living with a tantrika who was, you know, seeing clients in our shared dwelling, I really gained a lot of empathy for this really almost impossible situation that, in this case, there were mostly male clients, you know, men found themselves in with their partners who, this wasn't even for kinky fetish-oriented sex. This was just for simply outright affection, touch, you know, a physical intimacy that was missing, that many men were sharing, that, you know, they haven't had any intimacy with their partner for decades. So if you're now going to leap this bridge and go into, yeah, and I'm also kinky and fetishy and such, you can imagine how big that bridge is. I don't think I can say it any way but straight up. For a lot of people, this is going to be a big issue or challenge in their relationship. Because a lot of people will say because of their religion or their culture or their feminism or their whatever the case might be, their whatever ism that they're clinging to that says sex is dirty, bad, evil even. If you suddenly are trying to bridge this gap, it's like, you know, you're trying to go back centuries into these embedded states, you know, that your partner is stuck in too. But the truth is that if you've crossed this threshold, you know, you're not going to want to stop being honest. Now, there can be ways for people who are in relationships where their partner is just no way, and they love that person, they choose, I'm not going to change my relationship. They can still honor the truth of who they are ritually in a number of different ways. That doesn't require them to step outside of their own personal rituals about it. You know, that might be, for some people, too limiting, and they are at the place, no, I can't not be who I am any longer and not embody and express this truth. You know, then you're going to have to be in some facilitated position with your partner to, because I don't recommend that people try to bridge this alone, one-on-one with their partner, if they get a sense that, well, this is going to be too big of a bridge. You know, you definitely would want to have some qualified, capable person who can help facilitate that kind of transaction. And
so, are you called to do that very often?
I've done it on a number of occasions, and it's very, I can't say that it's, it's not something I look forward to trying to attempt, because there's so much stuff. I mean, unless people are willing to say, oh, let's take 6 months and we're going to come back once a week and really work through all of these complexities, because we're dealing with some very complex material. The best thing is to get this, we need to evolve to the place in our culture where this conversation is had before you enter into a lifetime partnership with your partner, of telling them exactly, knowing your inner mythos already, so you don't wind up 20 years later, they have no similarity to my mythos at all. This is a big, we are so outdated in our dating protocols that, you know, again, because sex is such the last topic, we don't talk about these things until, if at all, even until after we're in relationship, and then even still not even talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that this is a rocky road, and it's kind of like, I mean, it's, I don't know if it says, if it can be likened to this, but what came up for me is people who are in relationships and all of a sudden they find out that their partner is a cross-dresser or wants to have a sexual change. And they going like, wait a minute, I've been married to you for 30 years. Like, I didn't know this. I saw a show on TV about it. So this sounds a little lighter than that, but not so much. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
this is.
Well,
that's
the realities that we're talking about. You've hit it right on the head. Those kinds of things are not uncommon. And it only comes out by getting busted often, not by an honest conversation.
Right. Somebody found a negligee in their husband's drawer and said, what were these underpants and this negligee doing in the drawer? And are these mine? They're not mine.
Yeah.
what are you doing in them? So,
yeah,
we need to break here again for a second. We're just getting to the crux of this. How do you tell someone? What do you do? Woe is me. How can I possibly bridge this huge gap? So thank you. We're going to be right back. If you're listening to Sex and Happiness, I am talking to Galen, whose website is dakadom.com, dakadom.com. And he's talking to us about how people speak their personal truth when in fact they haven't known it. Or if they have known it, it's been so buried they haven't dare breathed a word of it to anyone. And we'll be right back. I'm Laurie Handlers.
Are you in pain or unable to sleep? Ever hear about how the body needs glutathione for natural cleansing? Could you use a boost of energy? Try Life Wave Patches. There are a variety of patches to choose from. Each one of them is designed like a small band-aid to help your body with the challenges of life when you're simply not getting what the body needs for support. And you can use these amazing patches on your pets. Go to Life Wave Patches for Pets and People on Facebook and see Suzanne Summers' interview with Dr. David Schmidt about patches that reduce stress and inflammation while increasing energy. You can also find out more at ValerieHandlers.com. That's ValerieHandlers.com. Or call Valerie at 714-928-6399 to order your patches, or consider becoming an independent Life Wave distributor. That's 714-928-6399.
You're listening to Sex and Happiness. I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and my guest today is Galen, and he is a personal guide for erotic empowerment and healing, and he wants to help bring your authentic sexual desires out of the shadows and into conscious awareness, and he helps people find a safe path for the real-world expression of their sexuality, no matter what the truth of it is, and helps them stay in integrity with their agreements to themselves and others. So, yeah, we were right on that precipice when we stopped about what people do when it's been a really long time and all of a sudden they wake up. I don't envy that job of yours.
Here's the here's the other part of that tragedy is people could have been together for decades, both of them having desires that are kind of off the charts or, you know, to some degree outside of the vanilla context, but they've never spoken about it. Yet they both, in their own secret fantasies and their own hidden reveries of their sexuality, and that happens as well. I mean, what a grand discovery if you can bridge that suddenly and find out, oh, wow, you too. But so the tragedy goes both ways. You know, one is just from hiding because one partner doesn't share, and the even bigger tragedy in a way is when both partners could share this, but because they've been so held down in speaking honestly that they can't even, with their most intimate partner, speak that truth.
Yeah,
that's a tragedy as well.
I mean, my mind is flashing. As you talk, my mind is flashing through so many people that I know, so many students that I've had who would never dare to tell their most intimate partner the things about them like this. And I've always looked at them like, you're kidding me, right? You wouldn't just tell your partner of 6 years that you want this, that, or the other. Like, what? And now, as you're speaking, I'm thinking there's so much shame. There's just so much shame. People just can't let themselves go to it. And as I said just moments ago, I don't envy that. It's not an enviable position to have to bring people out in that. So,
and that brings us to the sexual shadow aspect of this, and it is huge. The sexual shadow in America and the world, you know, Wiener, Schwarzenegger, Edwards, on and on and on. That's just the tip of the iceberg of the size of the sexual shadow in our country, and how relentless, unstoppable our Eros is. There's so much at risk by this sexual dishonesty, yet it doesn't hold back. And these people are the people under the spotlight, under just intense scrutiny. Think of all the people who aren't so under the spotlight and all the sneaking behind your partner's backs and the deception and the hiding and the fear of getting busted and then the shame when you do get busted, because our soul's journey is like that. Our stuff is going to show up and we're going to get busted and then we're going to have to face it in a very unpleasant way. What I want us to get to is this way that we can face it in a supportive, conscious way, because this shame, this guilt, this fear, this separation and cutting off, or this projection of it onto other people. Oh, other people are that sick and disgusting. I'm not that way. All of those things can be dealt with in a conscious way in a supportive environment. And I think we're on the cusp of that now. Eros is pushing us to be who we are authentically, and it's not going to let up. It's out of the bag. It's, you know, the war on sex is going to fail, in my opinion.
So, you mean, sometimes I think that, and sometimes I think maybe I'm just involved in the beginning of Sodom and Gomorrah. Mm. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think that, yeah, the war is going to be waged, but I don't think they can win. Yeah, and it's going to be ugly down the path, I would predict. In fact, I just saw today the article that the Sedona Temple, or not the... the Phoenix Goddess Temple was raided and busted. You know, now, that's just one example of so many things. Marty Stein wrote a great book, my people are maybe familiar with that, called The War on Sex, and he really details the way the attacks being mounted on from the government and the institutional side of the coin.
Sad state of affairs. Yeah, I'm here in Phoenix, so I'm well aware of that news that broke last night. Well, the thing is, I keep saying to people, I've said this to people for years, if we were meant to be born in not a feeling container, we wouldn't have been born in skin. If we were meant to not have sex and be sensual and erotic beings, we would have been born in metal. But no, we're born in skin, which is the largest sensory organ, with all these millions of nerves and sensory synapses. And so we do have to use it. And what we don't use, we lose. So the whole like sex is good for our health, orgasm is good for our health, the oxytocins I mentioned before are good for our health. Like all of it lubricates the system and keeps everything firing. And for people to want to shut it down is like murder.
Yes. And it's not going to, that's why it's not going to work, because they've been trying for millenniums to do this, and it's never really worked. But I want to come back to this point that you just brought up about our bodies, you know, and how important it is in all of this. And this is where I think the practices of sacred sexuality and Tantra and Taoism, Kadoshka and such are all very powerful ways for people who are just beginning to explore, because it the intention and the process is about getting connected to your body first, really recognizing this huge sense organ that it is, because your body has its own awareness and consciousness. You know, you put a body next to another body, both bodies are really aware of what's going on there.
Well, there's a body electric.
Closeness.
There's a body electric. You can feel it. Yeah. Every aspect of the cells, every hair on the arm stands up, even if it's somebody you're not attracted to.
Yes. So our bodies are carrying on this conversation, whether we're consciously engaging in it or not. But this, because there's so much fear and so much shame, those are all locked up in the body. And so part of this process, this journey to getting to your sexual authenticity, I think really it's important, it's almost, and it is necessary to really start engaging in body awareness practices, movement and breath, and engaging. This is when so if you are starting to engage, and maybe you have a partner that is open to exploring this, but you're new, the place to start is to really build a solid foundation of trust, intimacy, connection, and soulful heart-to-heart intimacy with each other before you step off into these darker edges, because that really needs to be founded, grounded in a safe way. And that's how you do that, is by these conscious intimacy practices that I just mentioned. So that's really the foundation, because we carry so much fear and judgment and these – it's such a – to – engage in fetish sexuality requires one to be able to embrace paradox, because you're bringing up two very different contrary aspects to be engaging in that has an erotic charge. You know, to be someone who's a masochist, you know, who likes to be beaten and degraded and put down, that's not an uncommon dimension of human sexuality. How does that not damage the soul or the person? Well, it's because you have two different containers operating. And the foundational container is this place. And this is why I recommend, and I think it's required, that people perform these rituals of dark eros, fetish, desire in a ritual container that's held within this bigger container, where before you begin with your partner, you both know each other's boundaries. You know what their limits are. You've agreed on what will be done and not done in this ritual process. You have a safe word that both parties know that, oh, we can stop this. Because you are often maybe going to get triggered by something, even though you've discussed and talked about something. Words have power, and there's words that are triggering for some of us in certain contexts that we heard our mother, our father yell it at us when we were a little boy or girl, and that suddenly, whoop, somebody said something and wasn't really out of bounds, but it might have triggered something. So there's a lot of process to go into.
Exactly.
To bring these things up.
This is we kind of have to stop here on this. We're just kind of warming up and getting started. But it's very, very critical that people heed what you're saying, and that there's everything right about letting yourself be who you truly are. And by the same token, there's safe ways of exploring this that need to be observed. And that's, I think that's what your point is here. And there are people who can guide you and help you to get into this, so that you're not in shame and in guilt by yourself. And that's, I think, the big message that you're giving here, Galen, mm-hmm. that it's that someone like you has thought it out, you know, and worked it out and played it out so that you, people don't have to be alone in their exploration.
That's why I think the wilderness metaphor is appropriate or one I work with, because I'm like a wilderness trek. You know, I've trekked in the wilderness for 15 years. I know the territory pretty well. So if you're going to go trek in the wilderness, it's often good to have a guide before you just run out there on your own.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today. I totally appreciate hearing about this. And I think it's true for people. You brought up something like completely new to me, the whole thing about this Eros mythology or this erotic mythology that comes out of people's mouths in those last few seconds. I think that's so great. I'm going to like be paying attention now. But I thank you. And I want to give people a sense of how to get in touch with you. They can go to dakadom.com, dakadom.com. And what's your blog?
It's called the Conscious Fetish Blog. And I write a lot of what we've talked about today or comment on news that's breaking and these different aspects of the mythos and the how to safely embody, express, explore your personal erotic myth, whatever that might look like.
Well, thank you. And that's at Conscious Fetish Blog.
Mm-hmm.
So that's people would just Google that?
Yeah, if they guess, that's on my Dakadom site. If you just go to Dakadom, you're in the Conscious Fetish Blog.
Okay, that's so great. Well, thank you for being my guest again today. I appreciate it. And I want to thank everybody who's listening. Thanks for joining me today. And thank you to my sponsors, my sister, Valerie Handlers. You can go to valeriehandlers.com and find out about LifeWave patches, which can make a difference in your life. There's small patches that make a difference on your acupuncture meridians, taking pain away or giving you energy or sleep, what have you. Also, hormonenurse.com. Thanks for being my sponsor, a person who you can speak to about hormone replacement in a very safe way. Many, many people need that. And, of course, Ladybug Eco-Friendly Pest Control in West Palm Beach. And my newest sponsor, Zestra. Thank you so much for joining the show, Sex and Happiness. This is Laurie Handlers signing out. Until next time, thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Laurie and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Laurie's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to make-